This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and joining us now is longtime senior criminal justice reporter Rebecca Lopez of WFAA-TV. Rebecca, I've been knowing you all these years, and I am so proud of all the things you have been doing. Welcome to the show.
I'm so excited to be here. I'm a big fan of yours as well. So it's such an honor to be here with you guys today.
Well, let's just start off by saying, you know, I do a lot of things with nonprofits, and sometimes I host a lot of the different events, and quite a bit of those events, there you are. I'm like, there's Rebecca. She's supposed to be tracking down the criminals and things like that, but and keeping the community safe and reporting all the great, all those Emmys and all the things you've done at Channel 8. I'm like, and you still have time to give back.
Well, you know, I've always felt that journalism for me has been more than just a job. For me, it's actually been a calling. Mm-hmm. And I've been involved with a lot of organizations, and I really focus more on organizations that impact our youth, but also women. There was a long time ago, organizations that I got involved with were domestic violence, because I did a story on a woman who was killed. And you could hear her murder on a 911 call in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And it just impacted me so much that for years I have now been involved with raising money and helping women get out of those situations, and have worked really closely with various organizations, including being on the board of the Family Place at one point.
Yeah,
because I just feel like as journalists and someone that does have a voice, mm-hmm. that we should definitely allow people to speak through us as well.
See, you and I are on the same page. I feel exactly the same way. It's like, you know, there's ways of impacting people's lives and helping, and it's time, talent, and treasure, and different people have different things. And again, you and I have access to platforms where we can actually make a difference and bring people together or shed light on situations that people mm-hmm. have no idea about. And I really appreciate you starting off by telling that one story, because people have no idea some of the stories you have covered over the years and how people find out about, oh, wow, that situation, like the domestic abuse, or maybe there's a child that's lost, but they got reunited with their family. Those things like that, they actually make differences, because that makes people more emphatic and more giving and more forgiving.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, because so many times people say, how long have you been doing this? Well, I've almost been doing it 40 years.
That's amazing.
As a whole, in Dallas, almost.
So you
start. Years.
So you started as a child.
Yes, I did. I was just a little baby. I was
right.
You knew. 5 years old.
You were new. Yeah, exactly.
It's so funny you say that, because my family, my nickname used to be the Odessa American. I grew up in Odessa, you know, Friday Night Football, Mojo, all of that.
And Friday Night Lights. Sports
that was me. And so, but the newspaper there was the Odessa American, but I always knew all the chisme or gossip in the family and in the city. And I was always talking to my family about it. So I was always nicknamed the Odessa American. So it's kind of fitting, I guess, that I got into broadcasting.
Well,
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because people have always asked me, you know, why do you still do this? And there were times, trust me, I could have probably made a lot more money. But for me, it was never been about that.
Right.
And every time I think about, okay, it's time to walk away, some new huge issue pops up that I feel, you know what, there's still a purpose for me and there's still a reason that I am where I am right now and that God still has me here because I feel like I'm still supposed to be doing this.
So how do you choose the stories that you cover? Because again, you're senior criminal justice reporter now. And I know sometimes you get assignments, but, you know, do you prefer going to the city council meetings or do you prefer going to the police office, police stations or the fire departments? Or just tell me how you kind of sort it all out.
Well, you know, my focus has always been on law enforcement. I don't know why I was drawn to that early on in my career. And I've worked in as a police reporter in Austin and Phoenix and then here and covering the Dallas Police Department for many, many years. And, you know, there's I've always told young reporters that, you know, the best way to really get strong and build sources is to cover a beat, because then you have people that trust you. You're talking to those people every day and they're giving you stories or you're working on stories that, you know, are going to impact the community through whatever beat it is that you're covering. And for me, it's always been law enforcement, Dallas police. I've covered, gosh, since Terrell Bolton, going way back with the police chief.
Yeah.
And there's always been issues, even before body cameras were around, there were issues involving people of color and the tension there was between law enforcement and people of color. And I think sometimes their stories were being ignored. And even before body cameras, we were doing those stories where we felt like, look, this happened to this person, and, you know, there needs to be justice for this person. Now, having said that, there's always definitely the police officers, because I really admire the work that police officers do every single day.
Right.
And I also want to tell those good stories of everything that officers do, risk their lives. In fact, I'm married to a former Dallas police officer, so I am very much a person that tries to see both sides of the story and give both sides a voice in fairness. And that's what we're called as journalists to do.
Exactly.
So yeah, for me, it's always been law enforcement. And it's been crazy because some of the stories are just gut-wrenching when you sometimes meet people on literally their worst day. Sometimes tragedy just strikes and it's hard at times when you're dealing with families, but I've learned to do that, I feel, in a more compassionate way, because I've learned, you know, that those families, they're hurting, and some of them don't want to talk, and I respect that, and others do want to tell their stories. And so I try my hardest to always be there and think about the victims. And when I write my stories, I think about the victims. I write my stories not in a gratuitous way, but in a way that tells and honors the victim. So I haven't shared this with a lot of people, but I've spoken about it publicly. My aunt and uncle were brutally murdered West Texas by a gang member who lived next door. He is now serving a life sentence in Texas, and he stabbed them to death, and it was just horrific. But we did not know that they had been stabbed. We thought that maybe they had been shot, and it was my dad's sister. So we're watching the news that night, and I hear the reporter say it was the most gruesome, awful, bloodiest crime scene anybody has ever seen. As the officers are saying, it's the worst they've ever seen. And when they said that, my dad just like fell to his knees, and I thought, oh my God, I never want to be that reporter, because I now think about the words that I write matter, and how I write them. People are listening. The victims are listening. The suspect's family's listening. Everyone's listening. Law enforcement's listening. So for me, it is, it's really important that I get my words right and that I always tell my stories with some level of compassion for the victims.
Oh, I'm telling you, you are excellent at this. And again, it's a skill set. I call it surgery, because you have to be able to think, you have to be able to empathize, but you also have to get the information correct. And you also, like you said, have to make sure that you talk to people when they can talk and be sympathetic to their situation, because people are real people, not just, you know, a TV show.
Absolutely. For me, I think the two stories that really haunted me the most was Uvalde, obviously being there with the little kids that were just, you know, kind of down in the school. That was horrifying. And then on July the 7th, when Dallas police officers were gunned down in downtown Dallas. Yeah, and I knew two of the officers, and one of them I had just spoken to. And it was terrifying being down there that night. It was it was awful. And just the heartbreak of what happened, you know, to the Dallas Police Department, which I think was forever changed by that one incident, and the deaths of their officers, and also the DART, you know, Britt Thompson was also killed. And so those stories for me really impacted me. I actually had to take some time off after the July 7th shootings, because it, you know, you're just dealing with so much heaviness at times as a crime reporter, and sometimes we just have to step back. Which is why I also, going back to volunteering, love to volunteer, because it is calming. It is something positive, and it sometimes takes me away from those really heart-wrenching stories that I have to cover almost on a daily basis.
Yeah, it kind of balances all out. Yeah, it really does, because it gives you a greater perspective. And again, we're talking with longtime senior criminal justice reporter Rebecca Lopez of WFAA-TV about all the different things that have been going on with her career and her work in the nonprofit world and the way she gives back. And again, I'm just so glad to have you on, because in that particular situation with the parade, I think the way that the nation looked at Dallas and handling it the best they could, it was like a better, I think Chief Brown kind of humanized it, just kind of the way you try to do your stories. He humanized it about how to handle the grief and handle a tragedy and handle a business. Is that the way you recall it as well? Because I think a lot of people were so impressed with Chief Brown that they wanted him to run for president. It's like, wow.
Oh, yeah, he definitely navigated a really difficult time for the Dallas Police Department, and he did do it with a lot of grace, and I know that had to be difficult for him. And I also empathize with the officers that were investigating that, because there were officers that had to watch those videos of their fellow officers getting killed over and over and over again as they still investigated the case. And I know, because I've talked to some of them, that had, you know, such a profound impact. And the Dallas Police Department actually expanded its resources and its department when it came to mental health for officers, because I don't think that people realize a lot. I hear people say, well, you're trained to deal with that. You're never trained ever. I don't care much training you do. You're never trained to deal with the death of a fellow officer, and you see it, and you see it happen. You're not trained to, you know, you're trained to be an officer, but you're not trained sometimes to see some of the things that you see. So I was really impressed with the Dallas Police Department and the expansion of its mental health unit for its officers, who oftentimes suffer PTSD.
Exactly. It's no different sometimes in situations than like going to war. It's and you hear about, you know, thank you for your service to the veterans and those who come back from overseas as well. And it just kind of, and sometimes, like, you know, Vietnam veterans don't want to talk about things because they have a flashback or situations like that. And ironically, you know, in different parts of the country, and especially in different areas where the police have to use a lot of force, it can be mentally taxing. And that's why I'm glad you brought up about the mental wellness aspect of this.
Yeah, they're human too. I mean, they have stuff going on at home.
Yeah.
And they may have stuff happen with their family. Then you might have caught somebody on a bad day. Now, I am not excusing, obviously, bad behavior by police officers. And
not all
those officers that get fired should rightfully be fired if they did something wrong. And I think any good police officer will tell you that, you know, the good police officers, but they don't want the bad police officers on the force. And so you'll never really get a lot of resistance when it comes to that. But you know, we do have to highlight the good work that they do and what they put up with literally every single day of their lives.
Exactly. Let's talk some more about some of the things you do outside of your TV work. Because again, you have made an impact in this area. And we're proud of you for a lot of different reasons. But you're also the president of the local chapter of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. How did that come about and how long you've been doing it? And that's quite the honor there.
Well, you know, so interesting. When I was in college, I volunteered at a conference for the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, which, by the way, at that time, I've been around for a long time, really was in its infancy. I think it was maybe only its second or third year. Mm-hmm. This was back in 1988. And I got a chance to anchor the very first student newscast with NAHJ and Gloria Campos, who has been my longtime mentor.
She's great.
Yes, she's amazing. She is one of the reasons why I am at WFAA, because I just admired her so much. Mm-hmm. And we worked together when I was a student at the University of North Texas, Go Mean Green.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had already volunteered, so I knew a lot about NHJ and have tried to stay active with that organization. And then about a year and a half ago, they came to me and they said, hey, listen, you know, we'd really like for you to help us. It was kind of more of a little bit of a relaunch. I think that the organization had been dormant, but it wasn't as healthy as it was in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have taken over and we're trying to grow our numbers. But we raise money for scholarships for anyone. And I want to make it an emphasis. It's not just for Latinos. Anyone who wants to apply for our scholarships, we base it on essays. And we give a lot of money away to kids that want to get into marketing or television or some form of media, whether it be in sports radio or whatever it is that they want to do. And I think that that's just important to continue to build the next legacy to leave that as our legacy and to build the next generation of journalists. Because as you know, right now, it can be tough to be a journalist right now.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of challenges that our industry is facing right now.
Exactly.
So it's important that we continue to grow those students.
Exactly. You want to be able to pass the torch, but you also want to help them get to where they're going, because there's so many levels of journalism and so many platforms where people can utilize not only journalistic skills, but, you know, the opinions and things like that. And sometimes it gets lost in the mix, and journalists, they have to say, wait a minute, here are the facts. Let's provide you with some facts here. So I appreciate it on that level as well.
Yeah. You know, and I get a lot of people who say, oh, you know, the media and blame it on the media. And, you know, I often have to correct people. In fact, I'm not going to say which organization, but it was a federal organization, and I went through their academy, and there was a lot of hostility towards the media, and they kept saying that, and I said, and one of the things that they brought up was, well, the media exacerbated the problems when it came to, or the tension when it came to the George Floyd video, but if you recall, it wasn't the media that ever released the George Floyd video. That was released by a citizen that posted it on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes now we are reacting to what we are seeing on social media. And everybody, you know, right now, basically thinks that they're a journalist without having gone through
the training,
the training and
the
they're not bound by the same code of ethics that
Correct.
We are. And that is to make sure that our facts are right, to make sure that we verify everything before we just put it out on social media. And now what happened with George Floyd was horrific, but for people to say it was the media's fault that exploded the way it did was, you know, unfair.
Exactly. These days, especially with social media, there's so many different information bubbles, and people get their information in their preferred information bubble. And what exacerbates the situation is that with algorithms, that's the only information you're going to get.
Right, like, you're getting what you're putting in. Exactly.
I'll give you a funny little story, Rebecca, because this is when algorithms first started happening. All I did was Google up belts. I wanted to get a belt, a new belt. You know, I was like, okay, my belt broke. I got to get a new belt. All of a sudden, to this day, I still get ads for belts. I don't care about belts that much.
No. But
I had to look it up. And then guess what? The algorithm said, hey, this guy is a belt guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you should see. Like, I do the same thing. I'll buy shoes online.
Right.
And I get like 1,500 shoe ads after that.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
And I cannot resist. So of course, I have too many shoes now. But
I understand. By the way, you've done stuff with the greater Dallas Hispanic Chamber of Commerce too. I remember I was at that event and I went, there goes Rebecca. Rebecca, can you talk about your relationship with the greater Dallas Hispanic Chamber of Commerce as well?
Yeah. So there's a woman there by the name of Amanda Moreno Lake. And I believe Amanda is now going to be the new chairman of the Hispanic Chamber. And I had recently worked with Amanda on some other things, and she asked me if I would MC this event. But I've often been involved with the Hispanic Chamber at different levels, and for me, it was important to do that because I think in this day and age, it's important that we highlight the successes that so many people in the Hispanic community have contributed to this city. And there are a lot of wonderful businesses that are part of that chamber and success stories, people that literally came from nothing. Well, like Amanda herself, she was born poor, lived in a little house with like eight brothers and sisters, poor, barely getting by. And she graduated high school, bought her first house, I think at like 19 years old. Mm-hmm. She started doing hair. And from there, she began buying buildings, and now I don't remember how many properties she owns, like 40 something properties or more, is a multimillionaire. Mm-hmm. And she did that just through hard work. And that's why I think it's important that we tell those stories of and people that have also migrated to this country that have then been very successful in their businesses and are great contributors to our community and our society.
Yes. And again, you play a big part of that as well. Rebecca Lopez from Channel 8 WFAA TV, senior criminal justice reporter. Rebecca, you mentioned about your husband, former police officer. Can you tell us a little bit more about you that you'd like to share? In other words, you came here, you told us a story. You grew up in Odessa and, you know, Friday Night Lights. But is there anything else you want people to know about you that you're proud of? And again, we're really proud of the work that you've done at WFAA. And like I said, you've been awarded with all the different things, including the Emmy Awards and the whole nine yards. And that's industry. But I know that. And again, you give back. You're empathetic of people and their situations. But is there something else you want us to know about you? Like with Amanda, she loves to cook. I mean, that's the way she relaxes. But I was going to ask you about yourself.
That's so funny. No, I told my husband when we met, I make great reservations. I'm not a great cook. I can make a reservation
anywhere. I love
that.
That's a great answer.
But no, I am really proud. I think the proudest thing I've ever done even more so than my career, is my son, Jacob. And so I used to drag him everywhere with me. People would see him. I think I got divorced when he was about 4 years old, but he lived with me and we did everything together. And Jacob has grown into this amazing kid who now lives in Chicago and started his own production company.
Look
and
out.
Currently he's working on some projects with Chance the Rapper and
Look
Nick Mensa and Amari Hardwick and just shot a commercial with Russell Westbrook that is coming out on some stations now. And so I'm really, really proud of Jacob. And he and I have traveled the world together, because I've always said I didn't buy a huge home because I did not want to be house poor, because I've always believed that that my money, I always wanted it to for experiences. Like, he and I have gone to the World Series together. We've gone to, you know, different places. We've been to Greece. We've been to Rome, because I just felt like it was important that we have these experiences and those memories that we'll always have. I mean, yeah, could I have, you know, get some Christian Louboutin shoes? Okay, maybe, but I'd rather spend that money on taking a trip with my son and having memories versus a pair of shoes.
Oh, that is
that's
awesome.
Just always been my philosophy. So I love doing that. And then I know this is, don't judge me on this, but a fun fact, funny fact, I actually, when I was growing up in Odessa, was the president of the Barry Manilow fan club.
I'm not judging you. And by the way, I actually am familiar with his fine work. I know quite a few Barry Manilow songs, yes.
Made my husband take me to Vegas for my birthday a couple years ago.
And he looks the same. Oh, I don't know how he does it. He looks the same.
I was like, are you serious? Why do you have me here? I said, well, just, you know, you're, yeah, okay.
So he wrote the songs that the whole world sings.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. Yeah, but no, most of the time, if I'm not volunteering, I am at a sporting event or I'm watching sports on TV. I love sports. Everything about it, football, basketball, baseball. And
I've run into you at some things, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge Dallas Cowboy fan. My favorite player of any sport is Adrian Beltre.
Love Adrian Beltre. Yeah, he's great. Hall of Famer, baseball, Rangers.
Yeah, I know. I was so excited when he went into the Hall of Fame. And then, in fact, I was at the World Series on the field right after they won in Arizona. And one of the first people that I saw and beelined it for was Adrian Beltre. He was there and I interviewed him.
You didn't rub his head, did you? Because he doesn't like anybody touching
his No, I did not do what Elvis Andrews did.
Right.
Yeah. And I love that. And in fact, I have a good Elvis story too. When he became a U.S. citizen and I learned that, I don't know how I heard that he was going to be, that he was going to get, take his swearing in, or he was going to become a citizen on a particular day. Well, there's only really one place in Dallas where they have the big ceremonies. And I thought, well, if Elvis Andrews is becoming a citizen today, he's going to be here and he's going to have to come out this door. So I took a camera down there and I waited. And sure enough, it was just him and I think his wife and somebody else that walked out together, and he did a one-on-one interview with me on the day that he became
a U.S. citizen. That's awesome.
And it was so cool. It was so cool. Yeah. That was kind of fun.
That's awesome. I love those stories. And which you mentioned this, like I said, you're all over the place as far as covering things and getting things done. Who is your favorite interview? Because I think, didn't you interview like Oprah and George W. Bush?
Yeah, I've interviewed Oprah, Cicely Tyson, Viola Davis. I've just interviewed so many people, but I'd have to say that one of my favorite interviews was Cicely Tyson, just because she's just legendary and she had so much wisdom about her career in Hollywood and for women and empowering women. And she was here to speak at St. Phillips School.
Yeah, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue in South Dallas.
I've actually interviewed some pretty cool people. I interviewed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Also,
wait. You say you interviewed Kareem. The first thing I thought first thing I'm thinking of is the visual. And so
I have a picture on my Facebook.
How tall are you? Because he is 7'3" that he admits to.
I'm 5'2".
Oh my God.
The picture of he and I is the funniest thing you'll ever see.
I bet. You're painting pictures here. This is amazing.
Well, and I interviewed Serena Williams. That was iconic. That was really cool. Now, I've also interviewed some very notorious people over the years. I've interviewed a couple of serial killers. In fact, I just did a story on Friday on the railroad serial killer, which I interviewed him when he was on death row. And then I also I interviewed Bill Cosby back in the day.
Oh, wow. Before everybody knew.
Yeah. Yeah, but he was here. I think he was speaking at Baylor. And for some reason, he was doing interviews at the mansion on Turtle Creek. And I went over there and did an interview with him. So, yeah, there's so many people that I've almost lost track of how many different celebrities that I've interviewed. But I mean, hands down, still to this day, I have to say it's Adrian.
Adrian Beltre.
But yeah. I did have to sit down with him when he did his, when he had the 3000 hit.
Yep.
And so I got a one-on-one with him. And that's the first time I actually had a chance to sit down and talk. And the Rangers allowed me to do it. And we talked about his time in the Dominican and how he came here when he was actually not really of age to play in the MLB yet, but he did. He was, I think, 15. And so we got a chance to talk, and I don't get starstruck as much as I used to when in my younger days, but I was completely starstruck interviewing him.
He's such a nice guy. He is such a nice guy. And that's another part about it. Like, sometimes you meet people and they're not exactly what you thought they were going to be like. And then all of a sudden, and I'm talking about on the negative side, sometimes like, oh, wow, he was my hero, or, oh, wow, she was so great.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And then you meet him, it's like, oh, maybe I caught him on a bad day. Adrian is just always good. He's just a great
guy. Yeah. I've interviewed some people that I thought were going to be like just really cool, because that's what you see on, you know, TV or in the movies. And, whew, yeah, they were a handful.
Yeah, there you go. I like the way you put that. That's being kind. They were a handful. Well, Rebecca, you are more than a handful. You are a grace and excellence. And I'm so glad you've been on the show today, because seriously, your career is exceptional and it's still going on. But you say you travel a lot, and I give you a lot of credit, because a lot of people probably wish they should do that, or should have done that, or wish they should do that down the road. Because
when you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's all about the memories. It's all about the experiences. And I think you found the perfect balance.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, no, it's so important to have that balance in your life. And I'm very blessed that I've had the opportunity to be at WFA as long as I have, and also to the experiences that they've allowed me to have as well, by sending me to some of the big events. I mean, I was covered the Mavs when they beat the Miami Heat. So I got to cover that. And I was here when the Stanley Cup, when the Stars won the Stanley Cup. And
yeah.
I'm still waiting and I'm holding my breath and I'm trying not to retire, because I really want to see the Cowboys win the Super Bowl, but I don't know.
Hang in there. Put it like this.
You're going to stick it through
because it's going to happen one of these days. At least that's what we hope. Hey, Rebecca, thanks again for joining us. And you know, I'm going to have you back on real soon.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And joining us right now is the CEO of The Urban Specialist, Anton Lucky. How you doing, Anton?
Man, how you doing, Chris? How you feeling?
I feel great, and I'm so glad to have you on, because just earlier, I mean, the previous interview was with senior criminal justice reporter Rebecca Lopez at WFAA, and the first thing she told me when I said I'm talking to Anton Lucky, she goes, oh my goodness, you've got to tell him. You got to tell him I said hi, and then ask him about the coffee shop in Pleasant Grove. And I said, okay. And so she was just grinning through the monitor, just saying, you got to talk about this coffee shop that You've had a coffee shop in Pleasant Grove. It's going to be in a former convenience store or something. In other words, you're flipping the script and you're putting it right there in the hood.
Yeah. First of all, man, shout out to Rebecca Lopez. She's always been a good friend. Channel 8. I mean, just all our stories she covered, and we just developed a bond over years. I mean, it's been like 20 years, Chris. So Rebecca Lopez, I regard as a good friend of myself, an urban specialist.
Well,
she's been very, very excited and waiting on the coffee shop to open up. And I know she probably said that because she was there when we first got the building. It used to be an old convenience store where they sold drugs at. It was a haven for all kind of stuff, right?
Right.
In the neighborhood, I saw. And so we were able to go in and purchase that, and we've remodeled it. And now we're at the finish line to open up a new community coffee shop / catering kitchen right in the middle of the neighborhood.
See, those are the things I love to hear about, because again, you're turning neighborhoods around, and it's with the neighbors in the hood involved.
Keeping the neighborhood. Yes.
Exactly. So what was the idea about why a coffee shop? Because I, believe it or not, Jimmy Butler, who just got traded from the Miami Heat to the Golden State Warriors, he's been putting up these coffee shops all over the place himself, because he says this is where a lot of people get a chance to meet and actually talk. And it's actually therapeutic as well, because you got the different brands of coffees, you got the teas, and people get a chance to communicate. Is that some of the logic that you might have had? I mean, I'm not saying you knew what Jimmy Butler, but I'm just saying that was his logic, and I could just see you thinking the same kind of way.
Yes, that logic is from the same vein. We did exactly that for that exact reason. Said we need a coffee shop in the neighborhood. Because, you know, Chris, as a lot of these neighborhoods, especially our neighborhoods, are getting development coming that way.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of places where people used to hang, and that the common unity that people had in certain areas are gone. They're no longer there, boarded up, or they're building houses,
mm-hmm.
or development coming. So one of the things we said specifically for Mill City, the area, the neighborhood Mill City, we said, man, we recognize that a lot of our seniors and even young people drink coffee. You know, mm-hmm. they drink coffee and they congregate and drink coffee prior to work. And so we said there is no coffee shop in this neighborhood where people could congregate, where people who used to stay in the neighborhood, who moved out but just has that tie, that can come back and see old friends who still in the neighborhood and just have a cup of coffee and a bagel. We wanted to be the first to provide that for Mill City neighborhood, man. I'm looking forward to opening that, to the grand opening.
That is fantastic. Keep us in the loop. We're talking with Anton Lucky, from the CEO of Urban Specialist, and you guys have been doing great things for a long time.
Yeah.
The number one thing, supporting the safe and crime-free community, and you know, the commitment of bringing people together, bringing kids together.
Yeah.
Bringing the law enforcement together, because they can learn the community better. The people can learn the law enforcement better, and everybody's on the same page. How has it been going, at least the last few months, the last few years?
Man, it's been going well, man. I'm excited. 2025, mm-hmm. The organization is off to a start doing exactly that. You know, our North Star is deploying, you know, an unlikely network of credible messages to reshape public safety, right?
Right.
We understand that public safety is a concern around the country that normally don't get the proper resource or the proper attention that it needs. And we know that when neighborhoods are safe, when people are safe, when communities are safe, that neighborhood can thrive. That's when businesses come in, that's when development come in.
Yes.
It's not easy work. So, Chris, we work with, you know, unlikely messengers, credible messengers and anchor change makers, and we put them in networks with others to go into communities and create safe zones inside these communities. And we do that several ways, man. And if I could just jump and just tell you real quick how we do that.
Take your time.
I would love your listeners to know that, man. We do that by, we have a Bishop Omar School of Entrepreneurship. That's mm-hmm. our entrepreneurship school, where we believe poverty is connected to violence. Lack of resources connected to violence. And so with the Bishop Omar School of Entrepreneurship, we have a keen focus on urban entrepreneurs. Because we know our communities have people who have ideas, who know how to hustle and bustle, but oftentimes they're doing it with the wrong product.
Right.
Oftentimes they're not having the right information. And so that school was born out of the idea that if we can equip urban entrepreneurs with a foundation to really understand and prep their business, they can go on to be successful. Then we connect them to institutions like bank. We create those relationships because we know once their business becomes successful, they hire within proximity. I mean, mm-hmm. they're going to hire a family member. They're going to hire a friend in the community. And guess what that does? That takes people's minds off of committing crimes and to, you know, making sales, legal sales.
Right.
So we have our Bishop Omar School of Entrepreneurs. And we need, I'll just say this real quick. We need some business coaches and business mentors who are willing to donate some time to some urban entrepreneurs. And to date, we've done 9 cohorts with 126 urban entrepreneurs that span across 13 different industries, you know,
nice.
Who are doing the work, who've been through our program. We're about to start cohort 10. So we do that. We have our collaborative community change makers
mm-hmm.
Program. That's where we bring law enforcement. We bring businesses. We bring social entrepreneurs. We bring OGs together to say, how can we together work in neighborhoods that ultimately decrease or reduce or eliminate crime? And so that's been one of my buildings too, man. We had 92 people in our building last month, but since 2024, we have and catalyzed 400 change makers through that program.
That's nice.
Yeah, they represent 8 distinct areas in our cities. And we've seen 750 resource referrals from that connection. So that's our collaborative community change maker, USC3, man. That's every Wednesday, first Wednesday of the month, where we bring people together and just say, how do we hover over neighborhoods to help neighborhoods and provide service, et cetera, et cetera. And then lastly, let me say this, our OGU, that's mm-hmm. our Original Guys United. That's a training session we do where we look for people with lived experiences who are coming out, who are saying, who have influence. And we're saying to them, listen, let's use your influence for good in terms of helping neighborhoods and helping kids not make the choices that you made. So we have that. To date, we've done 2 where we've catalyzed over 70 OGs and influencers this year. So we've been doing a lot of work, man. And then, of course, our on the ground work, which is we do our preventative work with our parent investments, man. We've done parent investments mm-hmm. all over the city of Dallas with the recreation centers, where we are going educating parents on how to not allow their kids to be perpetrators or victims of violence. You'll be surprised how many parents are just totally unaware of what their kids doing.
Yeah.
So these.
In other words, sometimes, you perfect example is like they send them off to school, and all of a sudden the kid get in trouble, and they go, "That's not my. I hadn't raised her or him to be like that." And they find out it's a whole different person when they get to school.
Is that exactly? So that's been eye opener, though. You know, just seeing those
mm-hmm.
parents, and sometimes we have their kids in these sessions. It's eye opening for the parents and for the kids, man, to understand how we can prevent, how we can not be a part of the violence that's happening in our communities, because we truly want safety, public safety in our communities. And then lastly, we have our victim service piece. That's our piece where if individual in the city of Dallas have been affected by violence, whether mm-hmm. they have someone murdered or injured, we have a whole system in place with a helpline that connect those families to resources, where whether it's crime compensation packages, whether it's helping with burial expenses, whether it's turning them on to counseling, because we have our mental health partners, but we are connecting these resources and trying to prevent retaliatory attacks. And so
right.
that's been working good, man. We've been doing a lot of stuff, man. We have 22 families this year with over 100 people coming from our helpline. So we've been doing a lot of work, Chris.
That is fantastic. For those who don't know, the helpline is 469-401.
Yes.
8317 or 469-401-8317. Did I get that right?
You got that on the nose.
Very good. Again, these are little things. And I highly recommend, especially in this day and age of people being online all the time, it seems, whether it's social media or whatever, Instagram, Twitter, yeah. Facebook, X, whatever it is. You go online, you go to Amazon online and get stuff. Go to urbanspecialist.org. In fact, just Google up Urban Specialist and you will see it. That is an amazing, amazing website you guys have created here. And I want to give you props because a lot of people don't know, especially people with small businesses, that's your business card. That's today's business card. When you tell somebody where your website is and they go to it, they can tell if you're legit. They can tell if you're on the rise. They can tell what you've got going on, even if it's like, okay, it's only a couple of pages. You've got several pages of the things you guys have been doing for so many years.
Oh, yeah, man, we really believe, and I thank you. Thank you for that, because we really believe, we love Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
We really believe Dallas is a great city, and our team is working tirelessly around the clock to make our city safe. We want our city to be safe, you know, from north to south. And these efforts sometimes don't they go unnoticed.
Because right.
You don't have people like you, Chris, who say, man, let me use my platform to highlight the great work that you guys are doing, because we are, in essence, making Dallas a safer city. You know, some of the stories and some of the stuff that we've done in the space, man, it will blow your mind, you know, just in terms of, you know, our mentors and our OGs out doing conflict resolution, mediating conflicts, all mm-hmm. that good stuff. And then connecting it to law enforcement. Like, we one of the first organizations who are connecting communities for real with law enforcement and saying, how can we keep our city safe? That's
right.
Big.
Yeah, that's the partnerships. Right, yeah, that's right. Yeah. In fact, the violent crime rate in Dallas has dropped 30% from a year ago. That's just one. It's all about networking, partnerships, and being, put like this, being aware of each other, or being aware of the availability of the help that is right there for you, or putting teamwork together, like you said, training up people to take care of themselves or take care of their neighborhoods. Man, you guys are amazing.
I love it, man. I had a mother up here the other day. I was in my office. They said she wanted to speak with me, came out and just was in tears saying, you guys literally saved my life. I mean, just the stuff that you do. And we get that mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, you saved our life. And it's not a handout, it's a hand up, because once they go through the entrepreneur program or any other program, we are inducing people to be responsible and accountable and giving them different pathways to move out of poverty, to move away from violence. And that's happening right here in Dallas, and we're doing it as an organization. And I want to say this too, Chris. Now, we definitely, because we do this work and we're doing it on a shoestring budget, we in this new year, we are definitely looking for new partners and mm-hmm. new organizations, new corporations to help us continue to do this work, because it's making a difference.
It really is making a difference. And again, you've got credibility from all parts of life, and primarily because you're a very smart person. And can I go ahead and pull the curtain back? Because we've done this in the past. You started out as a gang leader. And you wound up going to prison for a little while. And that's when you became inspired to do the right thing. Because what did the judge tell you? You're a menace to society?
Yes. Man, it was that. I had to realize that the information that I was getting from my environment was the wrong information. You know, the adaptation of the streets and all that good mm-hmm. stuff. Was wrong. The subculture was the wrong information that oftentimes a lot of us get, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it was till I was in a place where I could deprogram and then reprogram myself with the right information that I understood, like, my part in everything that I did. I had to be accountable and accept everything that I'd done and not make no excuse for it and say, how can I do better? How can I help better? How can I lead better? How can I go restore and redevelop neighborhoods in which I was a part of destroying? That's, and that exists in most people. You know, once you give them a chance, Bishop Omar Jawahar, rest his soul, gave mm-hmm. me a chance to prove myself. And, you know, the time I stepped out of prison, I never looked back. And I've been reaching back, pulling other people out, using all my resources, spending my life, because there's nothing like when that light turn on and you get inspired and you just ready to help. Because once you get the right information, you're going to be obligated to go back and say, listen, this is the wrong information. You're going to go back and say, sir. So those type of efforts deserve, you know, platforms like this, Chris, because it exists. It's the epitome of the sheer resilience of the human spirit. And that's what that's about. That's what my story is about. My story is I don't need no acknowledgement or accolade. Right. It's just about us helping people, us going back and helping our community. Because a lot of information that we got from communities we came from was bad information that put us in bad situations.
Exactly. And one of the things I admire about you is you do tell your story on a regular basis. And yes, for some people who feel like there's no way out, or for some people say, yeah, you talked that, but you never grow up the way I grew up. And all of a sudden they see you and they know not only did you grow up the way they grew up, but you went through some things you don't want them to go through, and that before it's too late.
Yeah. God used me as a sign, you know, like as a street sign. Say, you know, you go this way and you go that way. But, you know, and it's funny, too, because I'd be in a lot of different rooms that you just wouldn't expect somebody from my background.
Right.
And I'm always pulling out my camera, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, and people say, Anton, why you always pulling your camera out? I said, because you don't understand that me being in this room and what it represents to somebody stuck in a community, you don't understand the impact of that, because it says to people who are not in this room, who probably never be in this room, no, I take that back. They could be in this room. But it says to them that you can do it too.
Yeah, you can do it too. It's not impossible.
It's not impossible. I'm not an anomaly. Like,
right.
I want communities. I want us to be respectful, taxpaying, upright citizens and love each other, regardless of what color, creed, religion, or nationality. I want us to love each other. I just believe in humanity that we can love each other, and that we can be in this thing together, and our communities can rise because of that love. I'm just a true believer that, and I can't get off of it. If I tried, I couldn't. I just believe in people. I just believe in loving people, and I just believe in giving that information so a person can develop to their highest potential. You know, everybody should be able to develop to their highest potential, and I'm just an advocate of that. I'm passionate about that, and every room I'm in, I'm screaming at. So that's just all it is. It's just being an advocate for humanity.
You know what? This is what I love about you. You are able to reach people where they are. So you're talking about all the different rooms or the different spaces you've been into. And that's because your message is so pure. It is exactly what we're trying to do. Everybody needs to learn to work together, get along and lift each other up. But also for those who are having a little problem lifting that load up, they got to just be aware that there is the opportunity. And again, I'm just grinning over here because you and I, you know, like I said, we've been knowing each other for years and years. I was actually watching a documentary last night, and you said something just now that reminded me of part of this documentary. Now, this was, and I'm talking about reaching people where they are. You're familiar with Questlove, right? The drummer for the Roots, and he's on the Tonight Show, and he's the drummer with the band, and Questlove is deep. And of course, he's really good friends with Dallas' own Erykah Badu. He's really, and that's how I first met him. He's got a new, he won an Academy Award for a movie called Summer of Soul back in the days. It was a concert that was held and people just didn't know about it. And all the greatest recording artists back in the 70s were there. He's got a new movie called Sly Lives. And it's about Sly and the Family Stone. Now you say, what does it got to do with anything, right? Man, before Sly got strung out on drugs, he created some of the greatest music rather. You won't believe this, but he was born in Denton, Texas.
Wow.
But grew up out on the bay, San Francisco. But guess what? And I want you to see this documentary because you're going to be going, oh, my goodness. And I know how your mind works. You're going to be reaching out to some people where they are and where they're getting stuff. Sly Stone was the first one to have a band made of black, white, men, women, young, old, all of that in one band. And the songs he wrote were all about doing things together. Everyday people. Stand. All his songs were all about, we got to do things together. We need to work together. You know, if you just listen to the lyrics or you read, Google up the lyrics, it's the same stuff that you're doing. It really is. And he was just doing it through the song. And he used to be a DJ first. But he was always about the music. Grew up in the church choir, all those things. And then, like I said, He was all about, let's just put everybody together. I mean, that's why he's a legend. And he became bigger than just, you know, a musician. But then again, what always happens sometimes, here come the drugs. And it kind of tore him up. He's still with us, but you got to see. I highly recommend you check out that documentary, because you'll be saying, oh, my goodness, this is stuff I've been preaching.
Man, that's some of the best, you know, and I'm going to go check that out. And that's some of the best wisdom that we can get, man, is that we in this together, we can do this together. That's
yeah.
Some of the best wisdom.
Yeah, because that's what you've always been about, providing pathways to engagement, pathways to change. I could go on and on and on, empowering influencers to transform their urban communities. It's like you're telling the kids or people in their areas, you've got the power. You just need the knowledge to go with it.
Yes.
Or the opportunity.
Exposure, expand expectation. I spend my time going south and north of 30 to make those relationships, because I understood as a kid, had I had exposure to different cultures, to different people, to different ideas, Chris Angleton, where I'd be.
Mm-hmm.
I would be all over the place. And, you know, it's just that, you know, that is so valuable. You know, a lot of times people self, and stay in groups. But, man, it's so much power when you are exposed to different culture and different people. You can't put a price on how valuable that is, man. And so my job is to expose kids. I mean, I just know it's underexposure. When you start overexposing them to different stuff and going out of the city, out of the neighborhoods, you know, that stuff right there helps our communities.
It really does.
We all in this together, whether you're in North Dallas or South Dallas.
Yeah.
We are all in this together, and we all have a part to play.
Yep.
We all have a part to play to create this utopia, beautiful city of Dallas that we have, man. I think we all love Dallas.
Oh, yeah. And see, while you're talking, while we're sitting here sharing all this knowledge, I had to Google up Everyday People, the song by Sly and the Family Stone, 1969.
Indeed.
I'm going to read a couple of lyrics to you. He's talking about what you do. He says, sometimes I'm right, so I can be wrong. My own beliefs are in my song. The butcher, the banker, the drummer, and then makes no difference what group I'm in. I'm everyday people.
There is
the blue one who can't accept the green one for living with a fat one, trying to be a skinny one. Different strokes for different folks. So on and so on and Scooby Dooby Doo. I am no better and neither are you. We're all the same, whatever we do. You love me, you hate me, you know me, and then you can't figure out what bag I'm in.
Wow.
I mean, he's deep, but it was all great music. And
right.
I mean, again, like I said, in this day and age, especially with social media and people attached to their phones or whatever, it's always to get the message to where people are. And I think you guys are doing a fantastic job. What have you got coming up over the next few months that people need to know about where they can actually be a part of things? Because that's another thing. With a lot of social media, a lot of people don't engage in public anymore. They're kind of like, oh, they're on the phone, or they rather stay at home and watch Netflix or whatever it is. Can you talk about some of the things you got going on that, you know, where people can actually be out and about?
Yes, we're about to put it up on our socials this week. In April, we're doing our 50 for 50. That's where we're having 50 men mentor for a day, 50 boys, where we'll take them to different places. And it's all based around those principles that Bishop Omar imparted in all of us. And so around April 2nd, I believe.
Yeah.
It'll be up on our site.
But sure. UrbanSpecialist.org. More information as we get closer. Yeah.
Yes. We'll have that up, man. But we're asking if it's men who want to participate. We don't care where you at, where you come from. We want different levels of men who just say, man, let me just show up, man.
The
importance of a mentor on a kid's life is very important. And we're trying to save young men. We're trying to save these men and usher them into trades and college, as opposed to them being in gangs or in the drugs and all that good stuff. And
right.
You just don't know how important your presence is. And then if people want to support that or donate to that, we are open for that because we truly believe in, you know, pouring into our young people so they become their best. So they don't have to make the mistakes I made, as you said earlier. So we're looking for people to get involved with that. It's going to be a big deal in April. It'll go up on our socials this week. But it's an opportunity for you to just come up and just your presence with these young people is going to speak volumes. So we're looking forward to that. It's called 50 for 50.
50 for 50. When Bishop passed away, and it was very, very sad, it was during pandemic, how did your life kind of change because he handed you the reins?
It changed dramatically because, for one, Chris, I never envisioned Bishop Omar not to be here. Mm-hmm. He was always Batman and I was Robin.
Mm-hmm.
And I was comfortable in that position of being Robin, making sure he was straight, making sure that I served him and the mission. I was comfortable right there. And so he was Batman, and I never envisioned him to leave. And when he left, it put me at the helm of the organization and in control of people's lives and livelihoods to be able to go back, because I knew what it felt like being that kid trapped in the neighborhood with no exposure and the idea that says survival is the only way that you survive, you know, that you have to be the toughest, the meanest. I know how kids feel. I know how it feels to grow up in a household and your father's in prison. I know how that feels.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't know how to express that to someone. I know how that feels when you're a gang member, but you don't really want to be a gang. You really don't identify. That's not really who you are, but you have to put that on to survive. I know how that feels. And so for me, just understanding that is the passion of why I do this. I know that once people confront those cognitive distortions, man, they free themselves to become productive citizens. When people look at these ideologies that they got and they get different information, they free themselves. And our communities become better when that happens. Again, that's not the sexy work, but that's the work and the work that God put on Bishop Hart that I'm gonna continue to do. So any partners out there, any corporations, any just concerned citizens, we need your support. Go to urbanspecialist.org, find ways to engage with us because we want to continue to impact our community, thus impacting our city.
He is Anton Lucky. Anton, we got to have you on the show again real soon. Thank you for being with us.
Man, thank you, Chris, for everything you do and providing a platform for people like me.
Yes, sir.
You are a legend.
And we want to thank you all for joining us on Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.